WLCR, Mount Washington, Louisville.
Are we on?
We are on.
All right, here we go, folks. The first show of Lent 2019. Thank you for being with us on Happy Hour with Mike. I still like Happy Hour with Mike and Vince. I think that's fine. I think we stick with it.
I like the Mike Janicek show myself.
What are you partaking in over there? What is that? It does not look like the usual, customary.
The wine?
Oh, it is wine. It looked a little dark, even for red.
I'm trying to get in touch with my feminine side, so I'm going mild.
Well, then why didn't you have a Chardonnay then?
I don't like Chardonnay.
All right, we've got a fantastic program. Once again, we have back one of our favorite all-time guests. We've been meaning to send him up an honorary degree, but Vince can't get the dot matrix printer running. So we'll just have to verbally give it to him. So we have with us again Dr. Hadley Arkus, and he is I don't like putting that in front of his name, conservative political scientist, because he's just a very reasonable political scientist. He retired after 50 years as a member of the Amherst College faculty and is the Edward Nay Professor of Jurisprudence Emeritus. See, I'm getting better. Arkus writes and speaks frequently on pro-life issues and the main advocate and architect of the, by the way, this is why he's on the show today, of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act of 2002. I was actually there for the presidential signing, by the way. Thank you very much. I didn't know Dr. Arkus at the time. It would have been nice to maybe go to the Dubliner and have a fish sandwich and a beer or something. Mm-hmm. In the interest of preserving the doctrines of natural rights taught by the American founders and Lincoln, Dr. Arkus founded a new center for the jurisprudence of natural law called the James Wilson Institute on Natural Rights and the American Founding. And Dr. Arkus is a Catholic convert and frequent and favorite guest of Happy Hour with Mike and Vince. We welcome back to the program Dr. Arkus.
Well, thanks so much, Mike. Thanks so much. Great to be back.
Good to have you.
Well, sorry we're having to talk again about this, but we could only think of our friend Dr. Arkus when the Democrats seem to be in public, full-blown, full-throated support of infanticide. And, you know, I don't know where we go from here, but I have two concerns, and I'd like your opinion. One is either people are finally going to look and say, wow, kind of like we did when we started seeing the films during the Holocaust. That's when the war started to turn, I think, is when we started to see some of the horrible imagery and really understood what was going on. And we're going to start to roll this back. Or this is actually what I fear more. I think they've been successful in moving the goalposts, because what's bothered me about the pro-life movement with regard to both Gosnell and now this is it seems to me we're now drawing this big distinction morally at birth, and they're not. The left is saying, look, abortion is killing babies, and why should we stop at birth? And we're saying, oh, this is horrible. Now they support infanticide. Are they moving the goalposts further? Or?
Oh, you are absolutely. You have touched something that has really bothered me. I think one bishop near here said this is, and I've heard Gene Stein saying this is abortion extremism.
Right.
As though the other abortion, killing the innocent in the womb, is some form of moderation.
That's what I'm concerned about.
You know, have people seem to forget that there's the now, one of the rationales for this measure we brought forth, and we never concealed it, as you know, Mike, is that we're going to tell people, tell us what's different about that same child 5 minutes earlier, 5 days earlier, 5 months earlier.
How about that? Hadley Arkus has been drinking the Janicek Kool-Aid again.
No, I think it's the other way around.
That's actually a good point, yeah.
No, this is why our own people start falling into this. But I've been a little vexed by this recent stuff because Ben Sass of Nebraska seized hold of this. He seized hold of it last year, and he did nothing with this bill last year. He did nothing to bring this bill to the floor of the Senate when we had a chance in passing the bill in the Senate to enact it into law. We would have heard last year what we heard this year, that we don't have 60 votes to vote cloture, but we'd have. But as we did this year, you would have made people take stands on this thing. You'd have had the Democrats running in states carried by Trump,
yep,
declaring themselves on this issue before the election. And we've had a real we'd have had a real test of this, and it would have been teed up. So, you know, I had a meeting with SAS's people, and I asked them if they remembered Bill Buckley's story about the invention of the first coffee machine. It was, you put a dime in the machine, the coffee comes out, then the cream comes out, then the sugar comes out, and then the cup flops down. And Bill's line was, sequence is everything, isn't it?
Yes.
Sequence is everything. So I said, all of this energy that Senator Sass has expended with great hoopla, if expended last year, could have been expended with more effect. The problem is he was not paying attention.
Right.
He was busy promoting himself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but now he's seized hold of it. He could still do some very important work for us. There's still parts we wanted to restore to that bill that we didn't have a chance to do. The parts of bringing back the political branches and having exercising the authority. At the very least, to have Congress weigh in to say, the Congress proposes that whatever the court meant to establish in Roe versus Wade, we don't think the court ever meant to establish a right extending beyond the pregnancy and involving nothing less than the right to kill a child mm-hmm. born alive. Now, what that does is remind people, if the judiciary can pronounce on rights, the legislative branch must be able to vindicate and shape those same rights. And if the Congress can do that, the Congress can come back a later time saying, we don't think that they meant that this right to abortion extends for the sake of killing a child of the wrong sex, a child who might be deaf,
right.
a child afflicted with Down syndrome.
That's right.
Okay,
that's right.
Now, now, but now that they've done it, the question is, what are you going to do in teeing this up? One, you know, our expectation 16 years ago, when we did this in the first place, and the penalties were stripped away just for the sake of averting a veto from Bill Clinton.
Right.
Something I didn't think we had to do, because I did not think Clinton would veto a measure this modest. Just as the Democrats went along with it rather than suffering embarrassment at resisting it. But my thought was it would break out a lot of news to the American people that the people would find jolting. Most people thought that the right to abortion was confined to the first trimester.
And they still think that for the most part.
Yeah, and they still believe it.
Yeah.
But I was so naive. I thought I knew something about politics and life, but I never imagined, I really never imagined, that the media could impose the kind of blackout that it did and is still doing.
Yes. Somebody
pointed out that CNN never carried a word
right.
of the news about this vote on the Born Alive Act in the Senate.
I didn't see a single reporter attempting to speak with the governor of Virginia or Andrew Cuomo. I didn't see.
That's right.
Now, imagine what happens if our side gets too extreme on something. Or just, you know, take the wall, for example. Some in the left definitely view that as an extremist policy.
For abortion, it's a matter of rape and incest. This is the hard side for the other.
Right, right.
The hard case for the other side.
That's right. But they don't. They get a pass, and they got a pass again, and they continue to get passes, and it's deeply troubling to me, and I don't think it's helpful, as you pointed out. In fact, I think we have the article here with one of the bishops talking about this is now all of a sudden this is a horrendous abortion extremism, and all of my friends who otherwise have remained silent on Facebook and social media now all of a sudden are coming out and saying how horrible this is. And gosh, for all of us who have been involved in this for so many years, I do have a concern that if we're not careful in how we handle this, we are going to move the goalposts in the wrong direction.
That's right. But it's a teaching moment to ask them, now what is, do you think that this is a different being from the one that existed 5 minutes earlier?
Exactly.
Do you think that it's been a change of species along the way? No, you're yeah. Just effort. Now, the law. No, why aren't the law? Are the laws on homicide directly related to the size and weight of the victim?
It's okay to kill midgets.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's the argument then, isn't it? It really does come down to that.
I used to say there are politicians who could make you believe in abortion up to the age of 62.
Well, and
but this is one of the challenges for us now, that you know the other side has become so brazen and uncontrolled, they just can't control themselves. But I guess the line we hear from them is, this is a very this is close to what the governor of Virginia said. It's a personal decision of the family as mm-hmm. to what they could bear. Can they bear a newborn child with Down syndrome or some affliction? Well, when it comes up in other cases about the maladies, a child needing medical care, we don't, you know, we don't ask whether the family is inclined to treat the child.
Not yet.
No, not yet. But we will. Actually, this is going to be taken out of our hands. I've heard about the story of Catholic doctors actually in Portland making a decision in their hospital not to treat preborn babies, babies, because they are likely to have disabilities. Well, wait a minute, but the actual presence of disabilities can't be enough to warrant the withdrawal of medical treatment. Well, I conveyed that point to Roger Severino, a good friend who's doing with civil rights under Health and Human Services, and they do mean to come down on that, against those people. But you could see how far this is going, how far mm-hmm. members of the medical profession are willing to skirt around things for the sake of avoiding dealing with that problem
right.
of the child who survived. But, you know, you could see how they've talked themselves into it. Of course, they made the decision for abortion, and now suddenly the baby is there. And the line is, I think, it is easier for me to kill the child than to give away what is mine.
Wow.
It's a kind of Marxist reading of it, but it's a natural inclination.
It is, and that, to me, is... you know, one of the reasons that I think society needs right laws rooted in moral reasoning is precisely to protect all of us, because we all tend to have that natural inclination from doing things that are intrinsically wrong.
Mike, you sound so naive. Do you seriously think that your brilliant reasoning is going to sway the crowds that exist in politics today?
Oh, no, no. But what I'm saying is, I was asked at a debate with, what was his name, Paul Simmons, one of the ACLU mm-hmm. guys came up, and she said, Mr. Janicek, what would you do if your daughter came down with a horrible illness, that it was a fatal illness, but she could only be cured if she had access to embryonic stem cells? She said, what would you do? And I said, well, I don't really know what I would do. I would know what I would like to do, but all the more reason we need laws to protect me and my family from decisions that are rooted in emotional responses rather than rational, moral thinking.
Yeah.
So
I would hate to order up the killing of an innocent being for the sake of extracting the cells she needed.
Right. But temptations and as you say, you know... So
okay, but take Vince's point. I would think that one of the reasons we chose this method is that we think this scheme would rescue the matter from abstraction. They can't imagine what the child in the womb looks like, but the child is born. It's alive.
There you go. Yes.
And you say, are you telling me that your right to the waste, the right to an effective abortion, if the child wasn't decorous enough to come out alive?
Wait a minute, doctor. You just said something.
Decorous enough. Wait a minute, to come out
doctor,
alive.
Doctor, you said something brilliant there that I want to put back out on air. What? And this is the way we ought to be teaching this, as we're out talking with folks. How did you put that again? We've rescued abortion from abstraction.
I did in the Catholic thing. If the child wasn't decorous enough to come out alive.
How inconsiderate of.
But this infanticide and the Virginia governor and New York and everything else we're seeing in the last vote. What these are doing is they're removing abortion from abstraction and putting it out there for all to see for what it really
is. And what I don't understand was, I remember we passed that thing measure first in September 2015 with 177 Democrats, all but five or six lingering pro-life Democrats voting against this bill. So, and with former President Obama saying this is unconstitutional, that is, that the implication of Roe versus Wade is that we must be able to kill the child who survives.
That's right.
Now, this was the Democratic position, and we're going into the presidential debate. Never once was this raised, even by Catholic commentators on Fox News.
Nope.
People raising questions to candidates. Now, will that be raised? If Fox is prevented from... even Fox didn't raise the question, but I bet we won't see any people, moderators during the Democratic debates raising the question with them about the right to abortion extending to killing the child born alive. I don't understand why Mr. Trump, never made use of this. This would have been the clearest thing to talk about.
Doctor,
he could speak about naturally. What do you mean to say? The child, you're saying that the child is born and you have a right to kill the child? I mean, he could have spoken about that with real conviction.
Well, he actually did in his State of the Union address. He was quite adept at this.
He did mention it. He did mention it.
But he mentioned it. He had him on the hook because he had talked about Family Leave Act. And of course, all the Democrats and Republicans stood up for the family leave. And then he said, and how much more should we think about this in the context of a mother with her child? And he left them standing there and hanging there. And then he talked about Virginia. So I thought he was pretty effective there. But yes.
I think so.
Yeah, we can always do more, sure. But that's the problem. Everybody's afraid to talk about this topic, and I don't understand why.
Oh, I want to point.
I remember my friend Robert George used to say of the first George Bush that his problem for the pro-lifers was that he was all action and no talk.
That's a great point.
We really needed to talk. We needed to somebody to frame the argument. Just as, you know, this whole thing began as I prepared something for the first Bush his debates with Mike Dukakis.
Mm-hmm.
But then in 1989, in a case out of Missouri where the Webster case, the court was virtually inviting the legislative branches in the states to start legislating again on this, return the matter to the political arena. And Democrat and Republicans were panicking all over the country. My God, their constituents are going to be dispossessed of this right. And what I wanted Mr. Bush to do was just try to just settle people by coming forth and saying, this matter has been governed by the courts for so long, we need a conversation before we can legislate again. The other side insists that abortion is not infanticide. Let's invite them to tell us when they'll start protecting the child. And let's start there. So if nothing else, what about the child born alive? So this was my scheme for getting into this thing and challenging the other side into bringing them into a conversation. But apparently, you know, now my dear friend Mike Uhlman, who was counsel to President Reagan, has been working on with me in the Hill for so many years, and we're just astonished now that people find it really works. That there's been a swing of 7 or 8% in some surveys in response to this issue.
Yeah,
and I tell people, why does it astonish you that this thing plays well, that it reaches people?
That's right. It's shocking that astonishes people. And I will go back to I think it was the third debate. And again, obviously Donald Trump is not the most eloquent spokesman on this whole issue, but it was one of the rare times when you saw Hillary Clinton on the run is when this topic came up. And it was, I think it was the third debate, and Trump expressed it in his kind of, you know, street fighter way. He said, look, not, I don't agree with that. I'm not talking about killing babies. I can't remember the exact words, but I mean, it was far more incisive into the American mind than frankly what his vice president did in his vice presidential debates, talking all about his faith life and.
Yeah, he may not be the most eloquent speaker, but at least he is speaking. That's a point here.
So I mean, when we really come down to it, and I think that is the issue, and I just think we're how many years are we out from this now, Doctor? Well, 1973. So I mean, that's a long time. Everybody knows somebody that's had an abortion. A lot of people supported abortion, and I think we all know the ugly truth about it, but nobody wants to talk about it. And I think, you know, that's kind of a mission for our faith leaders.
Least of all those who have had or allowed participated in an abortion.
Right.
It's something we don't want to talk about, but like any other disease or distortion in society, we got to talk about
we
it.
We do.
We got to open this up and fix it.
You raise a telling issue that runs back so beautifully to Lincoln. Well, Lincoln had the same complaint. He said, here's slavery, this cutting issue. We can't talk about it in the churches. People say it doesn't belong there. We can't talk about it in politics. It's too divisive. He said, this is the critical issue, and we can't find any place to talk about it.
Wow.
And then you realize that it reminds us that the purpose, the function of a statesman, a political man, a statesman, is that he comes to recognition of what, in fact, stands at the core of things. What are the things most critical to talk about? And then he finds a way of teaching people how to talk about it.
Yeah.
And Lincoln would say, as I would not be a slave, I would not be a master. Since I reject the relation in principle, my rejection is indifferent to whether I stand on the advantage or disadvantage side of it. You know, he would speak in lines that would make their way into the letters of the Union soldiers. And in this way, too, Trump could just speak the most natural language. People say, well, my God, this is just too far. This is nothing less than, we hope that once people reach this point, you say, well, look, what do you think we're dealing with all along the way? Come to your senses on this. You know that it's nothing less than a human being even 5 minutes earlier. You know, it is interesting that when we came, you've probably heard me on this, that when we came forth with this bill, 2000 and 2002, our friends, like Henry Hyde, the late Henry Hyde, couldn't see why it was worth going to the floor with such a modest measure. But they were utterly astonished, and some delighted, when the National Organization of Women and other feminist groups came out against this bill.
Yep.
And here's the curious thing that affects us even now, that our adversaries, our enemies, understood this bill better than our own.
Oh, hold on. What happened to our bell, Vince? Oh, there it goes. Doctor, you are so right on the money, and I tell you, a smaller thumbprint of this bill, I thought, was one of Rick Santorum's greatest moment. I think he was arguing on the Senate
with that heightened intellect, Barbara Boxer.
Yes, and he walks her down, and boy, she took umbrage, and he was very calm, and he walked her. How about if the arm is outside the womb, and he walks her?
Toe.
This the
is
toe.
In the
yeah, and you could see they lose. When we make the issue about really what it is, they lose the argument, which is stunning to me. After 40 years, we don't take the argument on because it's such a winning argument.
It is winning. No, what happened there was that Rick said to her, tell me when you can protect the child. And she said, when you get the child home. And Rick, who's just a gentleman, said, "Look, I know you can't believe that. So let me just ask you this." And he started pressing her. She was digging herself in deeper and deeper.
Yes.
And she said, Oh, it's just the way you do things with words. You know? But the point I wanted to make, just to finish a quick point, right, is our adversaries understood this thing better than our own friends because they understood the principle
yes.
that lay at the very heart of the thing. It was the most modest of measures, but it planted the premise that, you know, you heard that line, when they were doing the bills on partial birth abortion, and we were twitted by Judge Posner in the Sixth Circuit, the University of Chicago Law School. And Dick Posner said, why would the state have any compelling interest in shifting the killing of the child back from the birth canal to the utero? And I said he had a point, because we never bothered to put in the premise that child, that child herself, has a claim to the protection of the law.
Right.
That cannot pivot on the question of whether anyone wants her.
Right.
So my point was, you know, Posner has a point. So I drew that line from Andrew Jackson's notable line at the Battle of New Orleans when he supposedly said, boys, I want you to elevate them guns a little lower. My point is, I want you to draw it back and put in the first point with our bill that, yes, that child marked for abortion.
We didn't really seem to gain any momentum on partial birth abortion until the Cat Grayson cartoon line drawings went around showing exactly what a partial birth abortion was, and sticking the scissors in the back of the head. When that cartoon, I call it a cartoon, but when that series of drawings, that little strip of drawings, made it in the Life Advocate out in Oregon and then into the broader media, that seemed to change the discussion.
It did.
What do you have now? A baby standing on the edge of the crib with a razor, a straight razor at its throat?
Oh, my.
How do we talk to people in this culture who there are still some who are just indifferent to this stuff? We've got legislators here complaining about comparing it to the Holocaust or slavery.
I think that's unfair.
As though the slitting of the throat of a child, of an infant, is not comparable to the things done by the Nazis. What?
Or it just put a whole circle of people outside the circle of rights-bearing beings. By saying that it's not a person, it's the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a person, it's a fetus.
Mm-hmm.
To shift the label, no longer protected by the law.
Yeah. Well, we're coming to the end of the segment.
It scares me that we've reached the point...
Nine seconds.
That you say some people are claiming the right to kill a human being has to suit their own convenience at any stage, even when the baby comes out. And
right.
people say, yeah, what's the problem? That they're so indifferent. That is the mark.
That's a problem. Thank you,
Dr. Arcus. You are always a treat. National treasure. I learned so much from you. Thank you so much for your time today. And I hope to do this again. So we'll be back on the other side of the break. We're going to talk a little bit about some private and public education. So you don't want to miss that.
Yeah, right.